You found Rowan Radio, your home for community news and information. 89.7 WGLS-FM, Glassboro. The following program does not represent the views or opinions of the staff or administration of Rowan University or Rowan Radio, 89.7 WGLS-FM.
Rowan Radio 89.7 WGLS-FM presents live coverage of the New Jersey gubernatorial debate between Democratic incumbent Phil Murphy and Republican candidate Jack Cittarelli. Now let's take you to Flieger Concert Hall on the campus of Rowan University.
We are live from Flieger Concert Hall at Rowan University in Glassboro, New Jersey. This is the NJ Decides 2021 gubernatorial debate. Facing off tonight, please welcome the sitting governor of the state of New Jersey, Phil Murphy. And the challenger, former state legislator and businessman Jack Cittarelli. Gentlemen, welcome to the final debate of this 2021 election cycle. Tonight's debate is co-sponsored by NJPBS, New York Public Radio's WNYC, and of course, our host, Rowan University. We do, of course, have a live audience here in Flieger Concert Hall. Everyone is following the most current state COVID-19 guidelines. Questioning the candidates tonight, my fellow New Jersey-based journalist, senior political correspondent for NJ Spotlight News, David Cruz, political reporter for NJ Spotlight News, Colleen O'Day, host of WNYC's Morning Edition and former correspondent for NJ Spotlight News, Michael Hill, and Rowan University's very own founding director for its Institute for Public Policy and Citizenship, Mr. Ben Dworkin. Very quickly, the rules for tonight's debate. Questions will be directed to each candidate, allowing for a 60-second answer. If a candidate criticizes their opponent directly during their response, the criticized candidate may take 30 seconds to respond to the charge. The format allows for a 30-second follow-up question from the panelist. At the end of the debate, each candidate will be granted a closing statement. So, let's get started. The first question goes to Mr. Cittarelli, as determined by a coin toss. Colleen O'Day starts us off.
Mr. Cittarelli, you want to give people a choice about whether to be vaccinated or wear a mask. But in a public health crisis, what one person does affects others. An unmasked COVID-positive person in a restaurant, store, or school could infect dozens of others. What scientific evidence can you point to that backs up your positions? 60 seconds, please.
First of all, good evening to everybody, all those watching at home, moderators, governor. Good to see you again, and as painful as it is for me, congratulations on your Red Sox beating my Yankees, I just want to say. Colleen, as I've shared with the public frequently, I am vaccinated. I promoted my vaccination. I encourage people to get vaccinated. And I just believe that my role as governor, when elected, is to provide all the information people need to make an informed decision. I will always promote, preserve, and protect the public health and safety and give people the information they need, and then the choice is theirs. So I just feel very, very strongly about that. I think when times are as challenging as these, and I've never said the pandemic is easy, it's not, but I think the best way to get as much cooperation as we possibly can is to find policy that works for a majority of people, as opposed to a very heavy-handed or one-size-fits-all approach. There is a lot of disagreement in the community, and when people start digging in, it's tough to get them to ultimately do what you'd like them to do. I would like to see people get vaccinated. And we're seeing more and more people do that. I mean, here in New Jersey,
that's time,
we've
Mr.
got
Cittarelli. Thank you.
75% of our adults who are vaccinated.
Mr. Murphy, more than 80... Mr. Murphy, more than 8,500 COVID deaths were in long-term care settings, about 31% of fatalities. It's been 19 months since the pandemic started. You have pledged many times to do a thorough review of what happened in long-term care. Why haven't you done this review?
I want to echo, it's good to be here with Rowan, with you moderators. Thank you for having us, Assemblyman. Good to be on the stage with you. I think you just heard in the Assemblyman's answer, and I'll answer your question, Colleen. This race, and I suspect this debate, and we're now talking about COVID, but my guess is there are going to be many examples tonight, are going to be the difference between continuing to move forward and work toward that stronger, fairer state, or slip backward to the bad old days. And that's what this is about. This is quite clear. The tragedy today is there is a playbook. We know vaccines work. We know masking works. For folks to ignore that, disregard that playbook, is putting lives needlessly at risk. It feels like an answer you'd see in a debate in Texas or Florida. We will do exactly what I've suggested. There's no question about it. The challenge is we're still in the middle of the pandemic. It's better than it was, but it's not as good as it was on Memorial Day. We had an enormous, the tragedy within the tragedy is in long-term care, and there will be a full accounting without question, independent of my office of this.
Mr. Citarelli, you're against vaccinations and masking mandates for students. How do you propose districts ensure safety for all without those regulations? 60 seconds.
Thank you, David. I mean, first of all, governors talk about mask mandates, but as the news reported today, he participated in a very large indoor conference, I think over the last 3 to 4 days, in which nobody was wearing masks. So I do think our leadership... I do think our leadership needs to be consistent in times such as these. What we saw throughout the course of the 2020-21 school year is parochial schools were open, private schools were open. There were some public schools that were open. I continue to look to Holmdel and Monmouth County as a perfect example of a community that dedicated itself to there being no learning loss. There was little to no spread of the virus there, and somehow, some way, they got it done with their air ventilation systems, with their policies on social distancing. So listen, I always feel there's a way to do this when we get together and find a way to get it done during these very, very difficult times when there's strong disagreement over how best to go about handling this pandemic.
I have to answer this thing about masking. Are you wearing a mask right now? Are you wearing a mask? We're on stage. I've done 227 COVID updates. I wear the mask on stage as I did tonight, take it off, speak, and put it on when I leave. And it's quite clear what the playbook is. Vaccinations and masking, whether it's in school or generally, that is the playbook. And willfully ignoring that right now is putting people's lives at risk, and we're not going to do that.
Well, if I may, David.
Yeah, but
in all fairness, David, what am I missing here? The CDC recommends that masks be worn for large indoor gatherings. He was at a large indoor gathering. In the last 3 to 4 days, it was reported in the press today, and nobody had masks on.
Nice try. Nice try. If I had your position, I'd change the subject too.
Mr. Murphy, and please, every time you applaud, you take time away from your candidates' responses. So please, both ways, absolutely. Mr. Murphy, you've allowed the state's roughly 600 school districts to make their own COVID-19 safety protocols, allowing for a patchwork of rules that can sometimes lead to confusion. In a statewide health crisis, shouldn't there be a statewide mandate? Take 60 seconds.
David, it depends on what moment of the crisis you're talking about. Early on, we had complete statewide steps that were taken. In March of 2020, all districts were closed. As we reopened the school year in the fall of 2020, the reality of the pandemic, again, you got to make these calls based on the science, the data, the facts. The reality of the pandemic in New Jersey was that it was different in depending on which part of the state you were in. You know, one of the benefits we have, some days it's a pain in the neck, but we have over 600 school districts. For instance, New York City has one monolithic district. We have the ability to be flexible. We opened the school year up now for the fall of 2021. That didn't bring me any joy. But the CDC's strong recommendation and our strong, therefore, recommendation or mandate, I should say, is you got to wear a mask inside. That's every district in the state. So at different points in the pandemic, you had a different reality, and we've got to be able to be flexible if we can be. And if not, we're going to have to take steps that are statewide as we're doing now.
Mr. Murphy.
Didn't I have a rebuttal on that?
You do not.
No.
I do not?
Thank you. Mr. Murphy, as we recover from COVID, the state's unemployment rate is still above 7%, one of the highest in the country. At the same time, many businesses say they are struggling to hire enough workers. Why hasn't your administration been able to get more New Jerseyans back to work? You have 60 seconds, sir.
Yeah, so, Ben, we have. So that, thank God it's not as high as it was at the worst of this crisis. We had our lowest unemployment rate in our state's history before this pandemic hit. And it's hard to ignore that public health is the reason why we're still at a somewhat elevated level. But we've thrown a ton of money at small businesses. Only California and New York have put more money on the street. We'll continue to do that. We unveiled a program a couple of weeks ago called Return and Earn, which is cash on the barrel for the employee to come back, but also importantly, $10,000 in the first 6 months, by the way, small businesses only, for that small business to uptrain, upskill that employee. We think that's got a lot of potential. Last I checked, I think 2,500 small businesses had signed up for that. Our unemployment rate has come down. It will continue to come down, but we want to accelerate that as best we can, and we'll continue to do that. We still have some more American Rescue Plan money to put on the street, and I can guarantee you a good chunk of that will go to small businesses and getting folks back to work.
Mr. Murphy, I have a follow-up. You mentioned your Return and Earn initiative. Why has it taken so long to roll out that kind of program? This is a 30-second follow-up.
Well, we've put $780 million into small businesses since the pandemic began. Only California and New York have put more on the street, and we're the 11th largest state. So in all fairness, it may not have been in that program, but we put a ton of money to work. The honest answer is we want to see what's working and what's not working. Cash on the barrel, for instance, does not appear to work. The upskilling piece, the workforce development piece with cash in the barrel for the employee, we think will work, and we're going to see it. If it does, we're going to expand that program dramatically.
Mr. Cetarelli, you have said people stayed on unemployment because of extended benefits. But those benefits ended 6 weeks ago, and there's still no sign that a large number of people are returning to work. So how do you explain the disconnect between high unemployment and businesses not being able to find enough workers, and what would you do about it? You have 60 seconds, sir.
So a recent study came out, Ben. It showed that New Jersey has 276,000 fewer jobs today than it did pre-pandemic. I think that has a lot to do with the fact that one out of three small businesses have now closed their doors forever, 50% of which owned by females and minorities. Listen, we are our brothers and sisters' keeper, and there are hardship cases. But I do believe that the unemployment benefits were too generous for too long. When you take the New Jersey unemployment benefits, add to that the $300 weekly supplement that came from the federal government, and on top of that, the eviction moratorium, we ended up with the situation we had with one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation, and yet everywhere you went, there was a help wanted sign. And as you go around the state, you talk to business owners, I can't tell you how many business owners would tell you, I have people walk in and say, I'd love to go to work for you, but you have to pay me cash. I don't want to lose my unemployment benefits. I think we in government had to challenge ourselves to take care of those hardship cases, but at the same time, cut the benefits off and get everyone else back to work.
Mr. Cetarelli, you proposed cutting more than $10 billion in spending and reducing at least a dozen taxes, including the millionaire's tax and other revenues. Which specific programs would you cut to balance the state budget? 60 seconds, please.
Michael, I think we need a tax system that works for everybody. Right now, that's not the case. The governor's budget is up $11 billion in 4 years' time. That's more than 30%. I don't see any type of cost cutting going on. A lot of people forget that at the height of the Great Recession, when we experienced the revenue cliff in Trenton, the budget went from $35 billion to $29 billion within 24 months, and we didn't raise taxes a penny. We didn't borrow a dime. The budget is up $11 billion. So just as it's that easy to increase spending, I think it's just as easy if we all sit down together to tighten the belt and find places to cut. I will tell you that I believe state government is bloated, inefficient, and corrupted by certain special interests, including those that have given the governor more than $10 million over the past 5 years. So I believe there's money to be saved I believe it's a bloated, inefficient state government. We can save money there. A lot of people don't realize the single greatest expense line in our state budget, including the federal match, $15 billion for Medicaid.
May I respond?
Michael, one second, Governor. Which specific programs would you cut?
I'll tell you what I'll do, Michael. I will sit down on day one with the legislature, and we'll have that conversation. But know this. His third budget was $42 billion. This budget's $46. If we go back to that budget, which he said was one of the greatest for New Jersey, we've already saved $4 billion. Let's look at that spending program 24 months ago.
Good. Governor, 30 seconds, please.
Three quick facts. Hate to let the pesky facts get in the way. We have fewer employees in state government than the day I put my hand on the Bible. Number two, why is the budget up? Think about it if you were a family and you didn't pay your mortgage or your rent. We inherited a complete and utter mess, and you were there for 6 years before I was. So we made a $6.905 billion pension payment, the first one in 25 years. We funded public education after you all had underfunded it by $9.2 billion. We're paying our bills. And by the way, every dime of the millionaire's tax has gone into the middle class for tax relief. Every dime.
Thank you, audience.
Every dime.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, 30 seconds, please.
He increased the budget $11 billion. If he had cut everybody's property taxes in half, I wouldn't have run for governor. I would have endorsed him. Listen, the budget's up $11 billion. People don't want a handout. They want a hand up, and they want lower property taxes in this state.
Boy, that's offensive.
Mr. Murphy?
That's another example of forward, backward. If you're out there, come on, man.
You're not paying your bills. Mr. Murphy, over the past year, New Jersey state revenues have been helped by $4 billion
in emergency borrowing. I didn't hear the beginning. I apologize.
Over the past year, New Jersey state revenues have been helped by $4 billion in emergency borrowing and a portion of $6 billion in COVID relief funding from the federal government. These are one-shot revenues in that we can't rely on them again. Where will the money come from next year now that you've pledged not to raise taxes? 60 seconds, please.
Yeah, I'll give you at least two thoughts on that. First of all, in the budget that I signed for the current fiscal year, all $4.2 billion that we borrowed is spoken for. There's a big bucket for debt repayment, and there's a big bucket for debt avoidance, meaning, I'll give you an example, the South Jersey wind port. We're going to lead the nation, if not the world, in offshore wind. That wind port would have forward versus backward. Again, you're hearing it live and in color. That would have been a $250 million bond. We don't have to do that now. That's one part of it. Secondly, on the federal money, our state has an awful track record, I might add, on both sides of the aisle, of spending one-off monies and filling up budget holes, making up for operating shortcomings. We're not going to do that. We're going to spend this wisely. We're not going to set programs up that leave the state holding the bag 2 or 3 years from now. And we've still got $3.8 billion of that American Rescue Plan
money still to spend. That's time, Mr. Murphy. Thank you. Colleen O'Day.
Mr. Cittarelli, you've called for an overhaul of the state's school funding formula as a way to lower property taxes, calling for, quote, fairer and flatter funding. How would you accomplish this? Do you intend to cut what is now court-mandated funding to many of the state's poorest districts? 60 seconds.
So I've said repeatedly that I'm not going to leave any child behind. I'm not going to leave any community behind. I'm certainly not going to adversely affect the quality of our K-12 education here in New Jersey, even though I do think there's room for much improvement in our K-12 education. I hope we'll get to that tonight. Under Governor Cittarelli, we're not going to send aid to the owner of a million-dollar home in places like Jersey City and Hoboken. That's what the current formula does. That's the reason why the owner of a million-dollar home in a place like Jersey City and Hoboken, towns that have experienced significant revitalization, are paying less in property taxes than a $400,000 home in places like Toms River, where the governor has cut aid significantly. Many of towns in Hunterdon County that have lost aid, Parsippany, my hometown of Hillsborough. That's not fair. That's something the Supreme Court doesn't know. It doesn't realize that by the way we send aid to places like Hoboken and Jersey City, million-dollar homes pay less in property taxes than a $400,000 home. We're not going to do that. So that's why we need a flatter, more equitable distribution of state aid to schools. And in so doing, create equity across the board for property taxes.
That's time, Mr. Cittarelli. Thank you very much.
May I?
30 seconds, Mr. Murphy. 30 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is another example of what I'm talking about. If you're in a black or brown community, or if you're a black or brown kid out there, you're going to get the rug pulled out from under you. This is the same flat funding formula that Chris Christie proposed in the spring of 2016, and he was driven out of the state. This is an us versus them move. There's enormous progress being made in black and brown communities where there's a lot of money being put to work. We have the number one... We have the number one public education system in America, but we don't have the equity we need. But the progress is undeniable.
Brianna.
Time is up. We'll come back to you, Mr. Cidrelli. Colleen?
Wait, I not get a rebuttal because of the criticism?
30 seconds, Mr. Cidrelli.
I'm sorry?
30 seconds.
So it's interesting when he talks about the black and brown community. In his 4 years in office, he has not approved a single charter school for the city of Newark, where two-thirds of the residents want charter schools. Not one. And if we want to get into the weeds of my formula, know this. It's not the flat funding formula that Chris Christie proposed, which would never pass muster with the Supreme Court. Mine will. He has not approved a single charter school in 4 years in Newark where they want them.
Forward versus backward.
We have to move along.
Please.
Yes, Mr. Murphy, you've set aside $40 million in leftover CARES money to help undocumented immigrants, but advocates say that isn't enough after more than 19 months of the pandemic. Why haven't you done more to give the undocumented families financial relief, and will you commit to directing more money to these families?
Everything we can. I can't commit to it because I probably need legislation to come to me, but I will sign that legislation if it does, and we want to do more. I'm glad we took that first step. You don't solve a pandemic by bringing some of the people over the goal line. You've got to bring everybody along, both the public health side of it, as well as the enormous pain and suffering that this has caused in the economy, jobs, loss of small businesses, etc. So I expect and fully want to do more, and I believe we will do more. And that's the right thing to do, by the way. We got to get away from this Trump us versus them stuff. We're all in the state together. This is one New Jersey family. And we have to accept that. We are a proud immigrant nation, and we are the immigrant state, and we wear that as a badge of honor. And we need to make sure we're taking care of not just some of us, but all of us.
David Cruz.
Mr. Cidrelli, you once called Donald Trump a charlatan, but then you supported him for president in 2020. What made you change your mind? And would you support him if he runs again in 2024?
So, David, in 27 years of marriage, I want you to know Melinda's called me worse than a charlatan a few times. I remember the Democratic presidential primary last year. Kamala Harris didn't have all the many complimentary things to say about Joe Biden at times. We know how politics can work. Once he was elected, I wanted him to be successful. I think it's un-American not to root for the president to be successful, and I feel the same way about Joe Biden. It's un-American not to root for the president. I also have a very selfish reason why I want the president to be successful. Our second child, first son, is a first lieutenant in the U.S. Army, and the president is his commander-in-chief. Now, over the 4 years, Donald Trump did have some successes at the national, international level, whether it was the economy, border security, hardball with China, moving the embassy of the United States to Jerusalem. I disagreed with him on where he was wrong on New Jersey. We don't want offshore drilling. We want funding for the Gateway Project, and we want our SALT deduction back.
If Donald Trump offered to campaign for you in the next few weeks, would you accept that invitation?
David, if you watch my campaign really closely, I'm not into endorsements. I'm not into other people campaigning for me. People see right through those kind of things. I go out and meet and greet with the people of New Jersey every day of the week.
Is that enough? That's a no.
I'm sorry, what's a no?
Is that a no?
Trump's not running.
Is that a no?
A no to him campaigning with me?
Yes.
David, I go out there and campaign on my own. I'll win my own election.
Okay. Mr. Murphy, you campaigned calling marijuana legalization a matter of social justice. Why haven't you commuted sentences and pardoned people who are still locked up for low-level, nonviolent marijuana offenses, which you have the power to do. 60
seconds. I gotta say two things at a point of personal privilege, other than God bless your son, Assemblyman. This would have been my late brother Wall's 77th birthday, so God bless you, pal. And I meant to acknowledge my wife and three of our four kids are here, and the fourth one, Charlie's watching at home. I think, David, we've expunged 362,000 low-level drug offenses, last I checked, in terms of numbers. So we did it for social justice. I'm thrilled that adult use, adult, important word there, is going to create jobs. It's going to create a new industry. It's going to create revenue for the state. I'm thrilled with all that. But the reason I got there, particularly as a father of four, is social justice. We inherited the widest white, non-white gap in terms of persons incarcerated of any state in America. And the biggest reason was low-end drug crimes. So I could not support legalization without having a symmetrical look back. And we've done that, and we'll continue to do that.
We're talking about pardoning, which you could have done as soon as you became governor.
Yeah, but I mean, 362,000 expungements, David. That's not like one or two. That's a huge first step. Whether or not we ultimately get to pardoning, I leave open as an option. But that's a lot of lives that are put back on their feet, and I'm proud of that.
Mr. Cittarelli.
Folks, we ask that you keep it to a minimum. Thank you.
Mr. Cittarelli, if you're elected, you could fill up to four vacancies in the state Supreme Court out of a total of seven. Will you only appoint conservatives to the bench, or will you follow the precedent of appointing justices that maintain a political and ideological balance on the bench in New Jersey? Take 60 seconds.
David, when the governor was trying to balance the budget, he initially there would be, I think, a $30 billion deficit, then a $20 billion deficit, then a $10 billion deficit. Asked for the authority to borrow $10 billion. I sued him, and we went before the state Supreme Court. And if you had ever told me that I was going to lose that decision 7-0, I would not have wasted that personal money. And my point is this. I think if that decision has shown us anything, we need balance on our court. So I'm not one for applying a litmus test to any Supreme Court nominee that then has to be confirmed by the Senate, but I am looking for people that are going to bring balance to the court. And I am looking for people that will also acknowledge that there are flaws in the Mount Laurel housing decision. Although I support affordable housing, we need affordable housing, the way we do it is just nuts. It flies in the face of our position on climate change. And I think we also need justices that acknowledge that there are flaws in the current school funding formula, and we need a new formula.
That's time, Mr. Cittarelli. Thank you very much.
Brianna, may I respond to that, please?
A quick 30 seconds, Mr. Murphy.
Yeah. I've nominated two outstanding women, Fabiana Pierre-Louis, who sits on the court, and Rachel Weiner Apter. And I'm confident that working with the Senate, that Rachel will ultimately be confirmed. I've renominated two other justices, both appointed by Republican governors.
Okay, we have to move along. Thank you. Shifting gears, Mr. Murphy, you've spent a year advocating and touting the Reproductive Freedom Act, which, for background, ensures the right to abortion in state law and allows certain non-physician healthcare professionals to perform those abortions. But legislative leaders have yet to even schedule a committee hearing for it. Why haven't you gotten this passed?
Listen, this has gone from something that I think folks thought was abstract and theoretical to here and present danger. You've seen the U.S. Supreme Court with three justices appointed by President Trump. And by the way, I believe the Assemblyman said his greatest legacy were those three justices. That you saw the action they took in Texas and the likely action they'll take in Mississippi. A woman's reproductive freedom in New Jersey is built entirely on case law, and all of that is in turn built entirely on Roe v. Wade. With the now not abstract or theoretical likelihood that Roe v. Wade is at a minimum impaired, if not completely stripped, we must take action. And I'm very confident that we will take action. Again, I don't want to speak.
Please, audience, allow the candidates to finish their responses.
A debate has broken out at a hockey game. I don't want to speak for the legislature, but I'm confident that we'll work together and we'll get to that as the number one agenda item in when the legislature returns.
Thank you. Mr. Cittarelli, you say you support Roe v. Wade, but you also support prohibiting abortions past 20 weeks of pregnancy. New Jersey is one of seven states, plus Washington, D.C., that doesn't put a time restriction on how far along in their pregnancy someone can still have an abortion. Would you seek to change that? 60 seconds, sir.
I would, Brianna. I want to follow the science, and I know the governor is someone that supports the science. We know from the science that the baby is viable after 20 weeks. We know that the baby feels pain during an abortion after 20 weeks. That's the science. But the reason why this bill hasn't been sent to his desk by a legislature that's overwhelmingly controlled by Democrats is because they know it's a bad bill. They keep talking about passing it in lame duck. Know this. Anytime they're looking to do something lame duck, it's usually because it's a bad bill. I don't know of anyone across the state of New Jersey on either side of the aisle, and nobody has shook more hands or talked to more people than I have over the past 22 months. No one supports an abortion in months 7, 8, and 9, let alone it having it performed by somebody other than MD. No one supports their daughter seeking an abortion and the parents not knowing if that daughter's underage. That's extremism. That's not New Jersey. That's Phil Murphy. We're not...
I'll get to you, Mr. Murphy. Mr. Citarelli, a quick follow for you, sir. So where do you stand on this? Do you support codifying the right to abortion into state law? Take 30 seconds.
I do not believe that Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned. I do not. I believe the Supreme Court will observe the legal principle known as stare decisis in landmark decisions. If it is, we will codify it here in New Jersey. I support a woman's right to choose. I've been very, very consistent on bodily autonomy type decisions. I've been very, very consistent on my body, my choice. So yes, if that's what we need to do here in New Jersey to protect a woman's right to choose, we will do that.
Mr. Murphy, you may have 30 seconds.
I will be very happy if you're right about Roe v. Wade, but I'm not expecting that, sadly, with this Trump-packed Supreme Court. So reproductive Reproductive Freedom Act is essential. And by the way, this is a decision not decided by you or by me, a decision to take that enormously difficult step is a decision between a woman and her doctor, period. It's not about you or me.
Thank you both. We have to move on. We have to move on. David?
All right, this we're going to switch to diversity and inclusion here. Mr. Murphy, numerous studies have found New Jersey schools are among the most segregated in the country. Several years ago, a coalition of education and social justice groups sued the state over this. Your administration has filed motions delaying a ruling in this case. How does that jibe with your boast of being a progressive?
Listen, that's the defending is a technicality. That's the obligation of the Attorney General. The Attorney General doesn't have a choice. But the bigger question is, do we accept that the legacy of slavery still exists in our state today? And the answer is overwhelmingly yes. I know we've each been asked about white privilege. We're the most diverse state in America. And if you don't know how to answer the question, it's hard to believe that you can govern the place. And segregation exists. Inequities exist. Look in public health, in education, in jobs, in opportunity, in housing. It exists. It's why we just put together a wealth disparity task force. It's why we do things like... David, it's why we do what the assemblyman was critical of. It's why we fund those school districts at the level we fund them at. This has been building for 402 years. It's not like a light switch you can turn on or off, but it's a long journey.
That's
and we're going to stay
Mr.
on.
Mr. Murphy, thank you.
Let me follow. Let me give you 30 seconds, Mr. Citarelli. The reason you can't hear me is because your supporters are applauding. So here's my follow-up to you. When we spoke a few weeks ago, I asked you if you had a plan to deal with desegregating schools, and you said at this point you didn't have a plan. Do you have a plan tonight?
You bet I do. It's right on my website. It's been there for months, David. We need to revitalize our black communities, which have been plagued by disinvestment for decades. It's right there on the website. It's very, very detailed. Let me say this. The governor, when he ran 4 years ago, promised a diversity study. It's 4 years later. We still haven't seen it. They just announced the beginning of the study. And I find some of the words of the governor hollow with regard to this. He hasn't given Newark charter schools. He hasn't given black-owned firms chances at public contracts. And the only asset-based management firm in the state that's owned by a black is suing him for racial discrimination.
So we don't have time for a follow-up, unfortunately. So I'm going to go to Mr. Citarelli. You were asked recently about your definition of white privilege and your policies to reduce racial inequality, and you declined to answer. Can you tell us now what is white privilege, and do you believe it exists? Take all of those 60 seconds.
Have whites had access to things that people of color have not? Yes, that's a sad fact. Has the black race been disadvantaged and marginalized? Yes, that's a sad fact. But we need to address it. And I believe that I'm addressing it by going into the black communities with the plan I've put forth on my website. It's very specific with regards to economic development, access to health care, solving the food desert program, working with faith-based organizations that are involved in various different types of secular activities like mentorship and affordable housing. We've got to bring economic development into our black communities that have been plagued by disinvestment for decades. But let me say this, again, with regard to the governor's record in those very same communities. No charter schools. Black home firms only got 2% of public contracts when they represent 13% of the state's population. They only got 5% of the vaccines when they represent 13% of the state's population. And the owner, the black owner of an asset management firm, is suing him for racial discrimination. And the most prominent pastor in the state said to him, "You can't treat black people this way."
You want to take 30 seconds?
Yeah. Somebody who suggests the school funding formula that the assemblyman is suggesting is not standing up for black and brown communities, period. Secondly, I hate to let facts get in the way, 31% of the money that our investment council has put to work since I've been governor has been to minority-owned firms. And thirdly, white privilege is real. The legacy of slavery is not a historical element. Let's not debate whether it exists. Let's accept it, sadly, and let's do something about it. We're the most diverse state in America. You got to get that.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. We're moving along. Michael?
Mr. Murphy, physical and sexual abuse at the Edna Mann Women's Prison have been well documented and egregious. In January, news reports detailed corrections officers assaulting female inmates. Many called for you to fire the corrections commissioner. You did not. He finally resigned. But months later, you still have not nominated a replacement. Why didn't you act then, and why are you not acting now?
First of all, what happened in January was disgusting, and not the first awful thing to happen at Edna Mahan. This has been building for decades. The Attorney General has arrested 10 individuals associated with that. I formed immediately an independent investigation. When that investigation was concluded, I said, we're going to close Edna Mahan. And we are going to close it. That can's been kicked down the road for 20 or 30 years, and it's not going to get kicked down the road any further. The commissioner, absolutely right, resigned. We have an outstanding interim commissioner, Victoria Kuhn, who's doing, I think, a very good job. She's been dealt a tough hand. I think she's doing an outstanding job, but we are still in the process of a national search for that position, and she'll be certainly a part of that. But it's an awful, awful legacy in our state's prison history, and we got to close that thing, turn the page, and move on.
Mr. Citarelli, you say you proudly defend the police. Should residents have a role in reviewing the conduct of law enforcement who are sworn to protect them? And would you support allowing civilian complaint review boards in New Jersey to have subpoena power? 60 seconds, please.
Let me say this with regard to the Edmond prison. There was nothing wrong with the building they're tearing down. What was wrong was the leadership. Department of Justice was here over a year ago, called it a rape camp, gave the administration about a dozen recommendations, came back a year later because of an expose, and found none of the recommendations had been done. It was a failure of leadership, not the bricks and mortar building. This governor and his attorney general have been the most anti-police we've ever had. They've handcuffed our police, they've disarmed our police, they've demoralized our police. The job has never been harder. Do we need reforms? You bet we do. We need to recruit more women into the profession and more black and brown people into the profession. And we need more community policing programs to build trust and a great relationship between the community and our police. I'm very, very fearful of the number of programs that are being talked about by the governor and other Democrats around the state, such as getting rid of qualified immunity, civilian review boards with subpoena power, putting disciplinary cases on the internet. I believe there's other ways for us to address the issues we have. I want to
That's
get rid
time,
of bad
Mr.
cops.
Citarelli. Thank you very
Good
much.
Good cop. I'm sorry?
That's time. Thank you.
May I respond?
Yes, you go ahead, sir.
Two things. Number one, there's one candidate on this stage that has multiple endorsements from police unions, and it's me, number one. Number two, we're guided by accountability and transparency. That's body-worn cameras. It's training. It's deepening the relationship between police and the communities they serve. It's readdressing the use of force, which we have done in this administration. And I'm the first governor since Governor Kane to have funded not one but two state police training classes inside of 1 year, and I'm proud of that.
But, Governor, would you sign into law a subpoena power for CCRB?
I don't think there's one size fits all. I apologize. I meant to say that to you. I think it works in certain places, and it doesn't necessarily work in all places. It's now currently existing in two communities. I would take it on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you. We need to move on. Mr. Murphy, we don't need to remind anyone here of the devastating floods that were a result of tropical storms Henri and Ida. There are more than 300,000 people in the state who live in areas at elevated risk of inland flooding. So should the state do more to bolster the Blue Acres program and be more proactive in offering residents money to leave their flood-prone homes? Yeah. Take 60 seconds.
It's got to be part of the solution. We do already, but it's got to be part of the broader solution. In fact, we're rolling out a big resiliency program today or tomorrow. Awful tragedy, 30 losses of life. Now 13 counties in our state have had a major disaster declaration by FEMA as folks are digging out of this. And it's quite clear that even though New Jersey, we probably have the most aggressive climate change and climate resilient program of any state in America, it's quite clear that these storms are coming in more frequently, with more intensity, and we all have to do more. That's why that big infrastructure bill in Congress matters, because it's got a lot of climate resiliency infrastructure in it. Blue Acres has got to be part of it. Sadly, you've got folks who have been, they see this every 3 or 4 years. I can't tell you how many families I've met. Some of these folks need to be taken out of their home at a reasonable, acceptable financial arrangement, and those areas become a natural runoff. It's got to be a combination of hard assets, like dikes and gates, as well
Thank
as natural
you, Mr.
areas.
Murphy. Mr. Chitterelli, climate change is increasing the risk of flooding across New Jersey. Mr. Murphy's administration wants to put more rules on development in places that flood frequently right now and places that will likely flood more in the future. Would you continue this plan, which is opposed by business groups, or would you relax development rules knowing the risk of future destruction? You have 60 seconds, sir.
So first, let me revisit from a few moments ago. The governor has not been endorsed by the two most prominent police unions in the state, both of which endorsed him four years ago.
Who's endorsed you?
So, second of all...
Who's endorsed you?
Second of all...
Stick to the question, please, Mr. Chitterelli.
I'm sorry?
Please stick to the question. Thank you.
Tropical Storm Ida, his declaration of a state of emergency came 13 hours after the Pennsylvania governor's, 2 hours after the tornado, and 1 hour after the flash floods. So it's not just the rain, obviously, the quantity of rain that's coming down in a short period of time. It's also the overdevelopment that's taken place across New Jersey. And a lot of it is because of the Mount Laurel housing decisions as they're implemented in the community. Now, we need affordable housing. Young people, disabled people, senior citizens, and our veterans need affordable housing. But we need to do it consistent with our land preservation strategies. We're not doing that right now under this administration. And that overdevelopment is what's causing the runoff, which is causing the flash floods, which is what took some people's lives.
Thank you, Mr. Chitterelli. We need to move along. Colleen O'Day.
Actually, I'm picking this one up.
Sure.
Mr. Murphy, your administration has a current goal of 100% clean energy by 2050. You've promised estimates for how much it'll cost and who's going to pay for it, but you haven't yet provided it. So, tonight, can you tell us how much will it cost and who will pay for it? You have 60 seconds.
I'm proud of what we get here. I just have to say the Assemblyman has called our work on climate resiliency and climate change too much, too soon, too fast. It's quite clear we have too much development that's not been done the right way. I, with all due respect, don't think it's an us versus them affordable housing question with Mount Laurel. We know the history of that. I think it's a much broader reality. We will make sure, Ben, I'm proud of this because it's the most aggressive plan of any state in America. It's got a huge amount of nuclear plants to bridges, which matter a lot in South Jersey over the next 15 years, an enormous amount of offshore wind, which is also a big game changer here in South Jersey. By the way, those tornadoes struck down 6 miles from here. And it's to be determined so in terms of how it gets paid, but it won't be on the back of the ratepayer. That's the important thing. The ratepayer's representation is front and center in this thing, and this is, again, we got to keep moving forward.
Mr. Cetarelli, you have 30 seconds to respond.
Well, I'm shocked by his answer. Everyone has been calling for a comprehensive cost analysis, and here's the reason why he hasn't shared it. It's because when you have to electrify your house by turning every single one of your appliances into an electric appliance, what it's going to mean to do that, to rewire the house, replace those appliances, and then pay for the monthly electric bill, your initial investment will be somewhere between $30,000 and $50,000. And that's not even counting your monthly electric bill. I think the governor has an obligation with this energy master plan to put forth a comprehensive cost analysis.
Mr. Murphy? Mr. Murphy, you have continued to divert money from New Jersey Transit's capital budget and the Clean Energy Fund to pay for the agency's operating costs. Why haven't you found a dedicated source of funding for NJ Transit?
I'm open-minded to that, but if you talk about the mess that we inherited, the mess within the mess was NJ Transit. No engineers, political cronies, underfunding, unsafe, a disaster. We are fixing NJ Transit. On-time performance is up. Cancellations are down, customer satisfaction is up, and we've done it without raising one dime of the commuter paying in their fare over the past 4 years. I'm open-minded to a permanent source, but we're not waiting for that. We've got new capital stock that's come in. We're redoing our stations. We've got new green buses and locomotives. As I said, customers see the progress. We've hired a record number of engineers. It was pathetic what we inherited. And this used to be, by the way, the number one transit system in America. Perennially, it was held up as the gold standard. And it had been ruined by the administration that preceded us. And we've turned this thing around.
Mr. Cetarelli, where will you find the money to fund? Mr. Cetarelli, where will you find the money to fund NJ Transit without raiding its capital budget and other funding sources, as you pledged to do if elected governor? 60 seconds.
First of all, Michael, let me say, one of the things that infuriates the people of New Jersey, you asked for the job. You asked for the job. You knew what you were getting yourself into, and yet, you know what we hear repeatedly from you? It's always the previous administration's fault or Donald Trump's fault. Okay? So, let me do something I rarely do.
Yeah.
Make a promise. I promise you this. When I take office in January, I will not blame the Murphy administration for anything. We'll get the job done. Listen, the greatest challenge that we've had, Michael, with New Jersey Transit is simply this.
Folks, we're running out of time. Thank you.
We've been raiding the capital fund to pay for operating expenses.
Where will you find the money then?
Here now. We've got $10 billion right now to take care of our greatest priorities in terms of capital investment. That means SDA, School Development Authority, schools, and New Jersey Transit would be my top two priorities for that $10 billion. If we make the necessary capital improvements, you'll see vast improvement in the operation of New Jersey Transit.
Mr. Cetarelli, when you ran for governor in 2017, you said the court mandate for towns to build affordable homes is, quote, going to make the suburbs poor, and that affordable housing should be concentrated in urban centers. But that's the opposite of what the Supreme Court has ordered. Do you think people have the right to live where they want, regardless of income?
Of course they do, and I believe that every community should have a skin in the game with regard to affordable housing. But the numbers don't make any sense. I live in a 52-square-mile former cow pasture known as Hillsborough Township. We just lost a builder's remedy suit in Superior Court. That's the way Mount Laurel housing decisions are decided today. 3,000 units are going up in the middle of a town where there are no jobs, there is no mass transit, and there's one highway, one lane in each direction, 206, which is jammed. So now we're putting more idling cars on an already clogged road, and this flies in the face of our position on climate change. So every community, should there be some affordable housing in Hillsborough? You bet there should. We've got seniors, we've got veterans, we've got disabled people, and we've got young people trying to get a start. Okay, but we've got to stop with the exacerbation of sprawl. It's time for us to stop going out in New Jersey and start going up. We need to get people start living in our cities again. And I plan to do that as governor with my revitalization plan.
Mr. Murphy, Affordable housing was one of your priorities when you first ran 4 years ago. Yet a recent Rutgers-Eagleton poll found roughly 9 in 10 New Jerseyans see the cost of housing as a serious problem. You've had 4 years. Why are so many New Jerseyans still unable to find affordable housing?
Well, we've had the census prove that all those moving vans weren't moving people out entirely. A lot of people came into New Jersey. The pandemic has accelerated that. The average price of a home, the median price of a home in New Jersey right now is $421,000. We already had a significant affordable housing crisis when we got into office, and it's only gotten more exacerbated again, largely because folks like what we're doing and the pandemic. Those are both good and bad reasons. We have finally, again, fully funded the Affordable Trust Fund, which was underfunded before our administration. We'll continue to do that. We are dogged about this. Mount Laurel's been a game changer. I agree we have to do it right, but it's been a game changer, and we know the history as it relates to Mount Laurel. And again, we've got to be really careful here about getting into an us versus them. I feel even uncomfortable saying the words, because people start to say, well, what does that mean? Who is who? We can't have that. And we'll make progress. We have made progress. We have to make more progress.
Brianna, is there an opportunity?
Colleen has one more question.
30 seconds. Go ahead.
This isn't us versus them. I never hear that from the people of New Jersey. I don't. What I hear is overdevelopment. Overdevelopment. And that's the great concern. And listen, the governor can say that people are not moving out of New Jersey. We tend to be number one every year in out-migration. But businesses are moving out. Nabisco recently moved out. It took 600 good-paying middle-class jobs with it and going to the Carolinas. So we need to fix New Jersey.
Mr. Cittarelli, isn't that survey, though, a very small survey of people who are moved by one van line company? Does it show a bigger pattern?
Mind, even if it's small, it still says that more people leave the state than any other. So that, to me, is very, very telling. And listen, we don't want an
That's
us versus
our time.
Them. And
I. That's our time. Thank you. That concludes the question portion of the debate. Each candidate will now get a 90-second closing statement. Mr. Cittarelli, it's been determined that you will go first, sir.
New Jersey, the state we love, is broken. You know it, and I know it. It needs to be...
Come on, guys.
Guys, come on. New Jersey, the state we love, is broken. You know it, and I know it. It needs to be fixed. And that's what my candidacy is really all about. If you like paying the highest property taxes in the nation, if you like having the worst business climate in the nation, waiting 5 hours online at motor vehicles, waiting month after painful month for your unemployment benefits, or not being able to get anybody on the phone in a state department within our state government, vote for Phil Murphy. If you don't mind a governor who says if taxes are your issue, we're probably not your state. If you don't mind a governor who says he wants to make New Jersey the California of the East Coast, vote for Phil Murphy. My plan is very simple. I want to lower property taxes with a new school funding formula. I want to create more jobs by making New Jersey the best place in the country to do business. I want to downsize, modernize, streamline our state government. I want to support the men and women in blue, the people that work at every level of police that try to protect us every day. And I want to get back to basics in teaching critical life skills in our schools. With regard to our state of affairs, I firmly believe that we can do better. And when I'm governor, we will. I ask for your support on Election Day.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cittarelli. Thank you. Mr. Murphy, you have 90 seconds.
There is no state in America like New Jersey, but for too long, we underachieved. We lagged. We let people down. Those days are over. We've turned to a new era. And notwithstanding the tragedy of this pandemic, it is sunrise in New Jersey. Hundreds of thousands of middle-class families have tax relief. Millions have a higher minimum wage or equal pay. Schools are finally funded for our precious kids. There's more childcare for helping out our moms. College is more affordable. Healthcare is more affordable. Women's health is protected and funded, and all of this while celebrating our diversity. We've done a lot. We've come a long way, but our work is not done. We have to keep moving forward. We cannot go backward, and we cannot afford an extreme leader. There's so much on the ballot. There's so much at stake. Do we stand with our sacred democracy, or do we stand with Confederate flags and white supremacists and a pack of lies? Do we continue
to make the tough... Do we continue to make the tough calls based on science and data to save as many lives as we can? Or do we put lives at risk because we play politics? Do we stand up for women's reproductive freedms?
Folks, please allow the candidates to finish.
Or do we think, as my opponent thinks, that Donald Trump's greatest legacy are his three Supreme Court? I know where I am. Don't sit this one out, folks. Serving as your governor is the honor of my lifetime. I'm asking for 4 more years to keep working to do things right.
All right. That brings our NJ Decides 2021 gubernatorial debate to a close. We thank you, Mr. Murphy. We thank you, Mr. Cittarelli, for your participation, to Rowan University for hosting us and partnering with us in this debate, as well as New York Public Radio, WNYC. A reminder, I'm sure you all know, but Election Day is November 2nd. Don't forget to vote. In-person voting begins October 23rd. We ask you to stick around immediately following this broadcast. My colleague David Cruz will be anchoring our post-debate analysis, a special edition of Reporters Roundtable, streaming live on the NJ Spotlight News YouTube channel. Thank you all for joining us tonight and mostly following the rules. We appreciate it.
You've been listening to live coverage of the New Jersey gubernatorial debate between Democratic incumbent Phil Murphy and Republican candidate Jack Cittarelli on Rowan Radio 89.7 WGLS-FM and RowanRadio.com.